Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
Good evening. I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight, our guest is Jeff Hall, inventor of Blackjack Switch and several other table games. We actually interviewed Jeff a few months ago when he was in Las Vegas, and the interview, while it is a couple months old, it's never been aired before. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com concerning table game patents. How easy are they to get? How long do they take? How much do they cost? Do you need a lawyer, etc.? Michael, you've gone down this path several times. Why don't you tell us about it?
It's a difficult path. First of all, there's two paths you can go by in terms of just getting a patent itself. You can go up front and get the full-blown patent, or at least apply for one, or you can go the less expensive route and apply for what's called a provisional patent. And I know two attorneys that specialize in writing casino game patents, and they vehemently disagree on which path is better. The good thing about the provisional patent is it's very cheap, and if it was written properly, if the game becomes a success, it like holds your place in line, and then you can tell the patent office, okay, I'm ready to file the full-blown patent, and it protects you from anyone stealing your idea in the meantime. On the other hand, the one attorney that I know would say that the danger of that is that if there's any mistake in the provisional patent, or if there's any difference between that and the full-blown patent, it might invalidate the provisional one. And I'm not an attorney, but he says that provisional patents are a tricky and dangerous way to go. The patent work aside, which a full-blown patent, you can probably expect to cost several thousand dollars. There's also the expense of the math work. To get a field trial in from the gaming control board is going to cost about another $5,000. And expenses will come at you right and left. And I like to tell people that you should budget $50,000 to $100,000 if you intend to market a casino game yourself. And last week, our guest was Roger Snow. And he, through Shuffle Master, offers a shortcut where hopefully you at least have a provisional patent when you approach them, but you don't even need that. They will basically see any casino game, and if they like it, they will enter an agreement with you and do all that stuff for you.
So in your game, which was Mulligan Poker, Mulligan three-card poker, did you have a provisional patent when you went to them?
No, I'm strongly in the camp to go for the full-blown patent right off the bat. So I have three or four patents. I've had other ones that were rejected, and I have some other ones that are still in the process waiting to be approved or denied. It is a very long process, especially for gaming patents. I would say that from the time that you submit your paperwork to the time you get your first rejection, which it probably will be, it's probably running 4 to 5 years right now. And indeed, you can't expect to be rejected the first time. It's almost like a rubber stamp thing. And and then you fight it on appeal. And there's some give and take with the patent examiner. And you may have to give up some of your claims and water it down a little bit to get it approved.
But the patent search to make sure, I mean, there are a zillion patents out there. How do you make sure nobody's had this exact idea or parts of this exact idea in 2008 in Connecticut?
That's what the patent attorney is supposed to do. He is supposed to research the prior art to see if there's anything out there that already is what you're trying to patent. And, of course, he can't search every single gaming patent because there's thousands of them. So he will focus in on certain keywords. And lots of times when I've presented an idea, my attorney will say, no, Ernie Moody claimed this, or, you know, Mike Wood claimed that. And, you know, we can either work around it or we can just scrap your idea. And that will be the kind of, you know, conversation you will have to have with a good patent lawyer.
Very good. Now, Ernie Moody is head of videopoker.com, and Mike Wood was his mathematician. Mike Wood passed away last year. All right. Now, speaking of videopoker.com, they have a free monthly contest every month from the 23rd to the end of the month. And the 23rd was yesterday. So to this month, it is, the game is Good Times Pay. You play 100 hand sessions, and if your session is high enough, then the first prize is $500, and there are 9 other prizes along the way. We haven't spoken about Good Times Pay on the air, so I thought tonight would be a good time to talk about Good Times Pay. It starts out as a triple play game, that is 3 lines, except you pay 10 coins per line rather than 5 coins per line. Every line gets a random multiplier. It's an evenly weighted multiplier, and the weights add up to 2 times. So sometimes the multiplier is 1, which whether 1x is a multiplier or not might be part of your definition, but it's frequently 1, but it can be 2x up to 7x. It averages 2. So you pay twice as much, and the multipliers average 2, so the EV of the game is exactly the same. So if it was a 97% game at 5 coins, it's a 97% game at 10 coins per line. The it does have a higher variance. Now, you also, Good Times Pay will have more W2Gs because sometimes your big jackpots, we're going to have a multiplier, and that's going to get it. Also, at some casinos, like, they might not have 9-6 jacks on the regular floor, but they might have it in a Good Times Pay game. And you can play those games at 5 coins per line. So if you're checking a casino to find out what games they have, make sure you check Good Times Pay, because if you know how to play the base game, you know how to play this game. And whether you play it at 5 coins per line or 10, it's the same game. And it can be better than other games in the casino. This isn't usually the case, but it is possible. Now, in the tournament, it's 100 hand sessions. And in the first 12 hours, the top score was something like 54,000. So somebody was dealt 4 deuces and a kicker or something and got lots of multipliers. And the game you should play if you want to have a shot at this is triple double bonus. It has the highest variance, so there's most chances of getting aces with a kicker or twos, threes, fours with a kicker or a dealt royal. There's almost zero skill involved in these tournaments. It is, I suppose prayer might help. It is being dealt the good hand. So even though you don't know how to play triple double bonus, it doesn't matter. When you get dealt 4 aces, hold them. If it has a kicker, hold it. So in a normal casino, the EV of the game is the most important thing. In this particular tournament, EV is irrelevant. It happens that it is the best version of triple-double bonus 9-7, which is pays a little bit more than 9-6 jacks. But even if it was 9-5, that would be the game to play, because how much you get for the full house and flush has no bearing on whether or not you're going to be dealt royals or dealt aces with a kicker. Any comment on this, Michael?
First of all, I think that with Super Times Pay, is that what you were referring to?
No, good.
Yeah, Good Times Pay.
Good Times Pay.
You can bet anywhere between 5 and 10, but the more you bet, the bigger the multipliers are. And yeah, I absolutely agree with you. As with most tournaments, you want volatility. And the way to get it in video poker is to play a high variance game to begin with and then, you know, throw Hail Marys just about every single hand.
And even, but throwing Hail Marys doesn't really work here. You have to be dealt it. Because, like, if you were dealt 4 to the Royal, the chances of getting the Royal on all three lines is like 100,000 to 1. So it isn't something where strategy, it isn't, because you have to be like dealt this and get it all three times, and on top of that, hope for a good multiplier. For example, a dealt Royal would be 12,000 coins. This person for a ton of hands had 54,000, so there were some multipliers involved in there. All right, now last week, Michael, you told us about your concealed weapon permit. And then you sent me an email saying that you said something wrong and you want to clean it up now. So what did you say that was so dirty and how do you clean it up?
You asked me, does this concealed weapons permit allow me to carry an unconcealed weapon? And I incorrectly said no. I said that there was no permit for such a thing, that you just weren't allowed to do it. And the first part of that is right, is there is no such thing as a unconcealed weapon permit, because anybody who's not a felon, and there may be other exceptions, is allowed to do that. There is no law in Nevada saying that you cannot walk around in public with a handgun, with a handgun in plain view. And that really surprised me, and I asked several people about this, including a magistrate judge here in Vegas, and they all said, yep, you're perfectly allowed to do that.
And so if you had a gun in your hand and you went up to a bunch of policemen, they wouldn't stop you?
I'm not saying that they wouldn't hassle you about it. And if it's in your hand, that's like drawing a weapon. And, you know, that might lead to a Costco-type incident, if you know what that was. I was referring to having it, say, in a holster at your side, where you're not touching it. If you're out in public and you're not, say, close to a school or in a public park, I think that if you're just out on a regular street, you would not be breaking a law. But if a police officer saw that, I think that they see this so seldomly, and I have never seen anyone do this, that they would get very alarmed and they probably would start asking you questions about it.
If you've never seen this, you never watch Gunsmoke on television. Maybe that's before your time. All right. A player friend of mine has an out-of-town girlfriend, and Cheryl's coming over this weekend. And I think she's coming Saturday and staying until Tuesday. So I asked my friend if he was going to be playing at South Point, which is going to be double points this weekend, or this Monday. And he said, no, he's already played enough there, and plus he lost, and so he sees no reason to play anymore. And I just don't understand. Playing quick quads, you can get $35,000 an hour through the machines at a 0.25% advantage. This comes out to a higher expected win rate per hour than you can get playing video poker most days of the month. So this is a good deal. So there's no such thing as having played enough. To maximize your income, you need to play as many hours as you can alertly. Now, had my friend said that he knows it's a lucrative play, but he preferred to spend time with Cheryl, well, that would have been fine with me. Each of us needs to arrange our own priorities, and I wouldn't be questioning his. But to say he had played enough and for that reason decide to skip the best play for the whole month, that makes no sense at all to me. Do you have any thoughts on this, Mike?
I agree with you 100%. That was a very square thing to say. And if there is a good play out there, you need to play it as hard as possible if there's no other higher priority in your life. And, for example, if I saw a really lucrative double point day or something like that, like you just mentioned, and I thought it was worthy of my time, I would no matter how badly I was doing, I would be tenacious and just keep playing that thing. And to put these win and loss limits is just Rob Singer-style mathematical voodoo.
Yeah, unless you seriously have bankroll limits, which is definitely possible.
Correct.
All right, good. So does this mean I'm expected to see you at South Point on the Monday?
Let's talk about it after the show. But, yeah, I'm free that day.
All right, good. I can afford that. All right, so we have this interview with Jeff Hall, so why don't we play that one now?
Jeff Hall is probably best known as the inventor of Blackjack Switch. He is one of the few independent game inventors who has made a successful career out of creating and selling games on his own. Besides Blackjack Switch, Jeff continues to invent other games, three of which are currently being played in Las Vegas. Before Jeff got mixed up in the world of creating games, he was beating them. Jeff is a skilled blackjack player in counting and shuffle tracking. He also plays Omaha and backgammon well enough to make money at it. I've known Jeff for several years and did the original math for some of his games. This interview is being pre-recorded while Jeff had a chance to come into the studio during one of his Vegas visits before Jeff flies back to the United Kingdom. Here to tell us about his games and the life of an advantage player and game inventor is Jeff Hall. Jeff, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks for coming. So, let's talk about Blackjack Switch. What was the inspiration behind the idea of switching your cards in blackjack?
I think it came up from when I used to play blackjack in the UK as an advantage player. I typically play two hands of blackjack. And it was just one night I noticed that if only my two top cards were the other way around, I would have cleared the tray. And I went away thinking, why can't I allow a game where players can do that, have that opportunity to, you know, take a choice of where their top cards land?
And this is also actually a cheating move in regular blackjack, where the player will play two hands, and if it's to his advantage to switch the last two cards, he will create some sort of a distraction and switch them in a cheating maneuver.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that I never practiced any of those sort of maneuvers, and I wanted to make sure that I gave a game that gave the players the option to, if you like, cheat, but do it in a correct way.
If it's correct, it takes a lot of the fun out of cheating, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it just makes it a bit safe. You're not going to get the tap on the shoulder or anything.
Now, in Blackjack 20, earns Blackjack Switch, what makes it work is the dealer, if he hits 22, instead of losing the hand, any live bet that's still active pushes. So this is like 7% or something house advantage. Were you worried when this came about that players would revolt against giving this up? Because players don't like this, but they do like the switch, and they have to pay one to get the other.
I think it's a good question, Bob. My first game of Blackjack Switch, my first version, actually involved the dealer taking ties with the player on 17, 18, and 19. And that version went out into Iowa and into the Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. And the player's response was reasonable, but it didn't quite grasp it for me. It didn't quite grab the ideal version. And one of the reasons is that, let's say I'm sitting down with you and Mike, and you two are both dealt 20s and I'm dealt an 18, and the dealer makes 18, although it hasn't affected you on the dealer takes ties, you've seen something negative happen to me. The very next round, me and Mike might have blackjacks, you might have a 19, Bob, the dealer turns a 19 over. Now we've seen something negative happen to you. And the third hand, it might happen to Mike. So all three hands, something negative has happened on each individual occurrence. Whereas what I wanted to come up with was something that would affect the players in one go, something that the dealer would do. And that led me to think, well, what does the dealer do that affects the players in one go? Well, he busts. If the dealer busts, he pays the players. So why not look at not paying the players out in one go?
Psychologically speaking, do you think that it's better to turn a win into a push than a push into a loss?
Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Excuse me. When the player loses a tie, imagine that a player has got a bet that ties with the dealer, and I'm going to say, look, I'm going to take your money anyway. That's quite... The player doesn't like that. Now, if a player wins a hand and you say, you know what, in this game I'm just going to push it, that's a slightly softer feel, even though the effect is the same. The player still loses out on one unit.
When video poker, we think a push is a win. On jacks or better, when you get your money back,
absolutely,
people go, I won.
yeah, and I think that's it's a very subtle difference, but it does seem to have the effect. Players don't want to have money taken off them when they don't feel that they deserve to have it taken off them.
Yeah, slot machines too, is you think that you win money every hand when really you lose money most of the time. So
now, this push on 22, dealers who just came over from a regular blackjack game are, if they don't have their mind on straight, are going to start paying off on 22. Now, of course, as players, we look for such dealers. But does this happen very often? And how do you guard against this as working for the casino?
Yeah, it unfortunately, it does happen. I did have a strip casino a couple of years back say to me, our dealers are still paying out occasionally on 22, and we've had the game over a year. So I asked to look at the pit layout, and typically blackjack switch will land itself in between blackjack tables as well as other carnival games. So my suggestion to the casino at the time was, if you can, if you've got the luxury to be able to place your dealers around the pit, don't put a dealer directly from a regular blackjack game onto blackjack switch. Take them off three-car poker, or take them off Ultimate Texas Hold'em. Take them off another game. And they did that, and actually it really ironed out the 22s. So that would be a suggestion, if there are any casinos who've got the game who are listening in. Try not to put your dealer from a regular blackjack game onto blackjack switch.
Good advice. So blackjack switch for years was played at the Casino Royale, and as far as I know, the Casino Royale was the only casino on the strip to have the game. And then suddenly it just spread like wildfire. So why did it take several years for blackjack switch to become an overnight hit? And what is it that happened suddenly that turned the game around?
I think there was two factors, Mike. I think one of the things that happened is the economy started just tightening up a little bit. And that makes casinos more hungry. Then they don't just sit there and think, I'm happy with what I've got. And it makes them want to look out for more ways to bring players in, keep players interested. And the big call I got was from the Wynn, you know, one of the most prominent strip casino properties out there. They had obviously heard from the game through Casino Royale and asked to try the game out. As soon as the Wynn put it in, it was an instant hit. They put it next door at the Encore, and the next thing, the MGM group heard about it, and then other casinos, and it really opened up the strip like wildfire. Within 9 months, I had a lot of the top strip properties locked up.
Yeah, the Casino Royale is a strip property, but it's not a strip property.
it's actually positioned extremely well, and that's what did it for me. They advertised the game well. I don't know if you ever walked past Casino Royale and heard that loudspeaker, you know, come inside and switch your cards. And you know, at one stage they had six blackjack switch tables. I think they've got five as we speak now. But because of their location, and because players do walk past and hear that, I'm like, what's that switching? Where do I get that? It opened up the door on the rest of the strip.
Very good.
When you're inventing a game, actually, let's just stay on blackjack switch for a while. It was in Russia for a while. Do you have anything interesting to tell us about blackjack switch in Russia?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things that come to mind. Obviously, there's a lot of stories that come from places like Moscow. But the Push 22 version first went into Moscow. That was the first installation. And when I trained the game there, the dealers were quite robotic, and they count their totals, and if they got 15 and they get a 9, they will announce 24. So the push 22 was never an issue. So one of the things, firstly, that came from Russia was when I came over to the Las Vegas to train the game, I never considered emphasizing the push 22 because it was never an issue in Moscow. And yet over here, the dealer is a little bit more interactive with players. They tend not to always count their totals above 21. And so all of a sudden, I realized this push 22 was something that had to be quashed, you know, had to be sorted out. Otherwise, the game wasn't going to last. And then something that was quite, I find amusing from Moscow is that in Russia, there isn't a word that means switch. It's a sort of a sentence, which is going to be a bit cumbersome on a blackjack switch table to ask the dealer a string full of words. So they actually taught the game by telling the players to use the word switch. So I used to walk around Moscow casinos watching these Russians going like, switch. And that actually meant, you know, I'd love to know if I was in the Russian dictionary as a, you know, a process of interchanging two cards between two blackjack hands. But I haven't checked, so if anybody's out there who knows, let me know.
So not only will you be remembered for blackjack switch, but for introducing a new word to the Russian language.
Yeah, it could be possible, yeah.
For Americanizing the pure Russian language.
Exactly.
You'll be scorned.
Okay, so... besides blackjack switch, you're the inventor of power blackjack, burn 20 blackjack, never bust blackjack, and free bet blackjack. So can you tell us more about why you focus so much on blackjack while it seems that most other game inventors are concentrating on poker? And is it your business strategy that you don't want to put all your eggs in the basket of blackjack switch, but want to try to get as many games out there as possible and hope that some of them are a hit?
Yeah, I, firstly, the free bet blackjack that you mentioned, this is a scoop for your listeners because it hasn't been released in the Las Vegas yet, but it will be trialed at the Golden Nugget in May. That's something to look out for, hopefully. The blackjack variations, it was just a natural progression. By accident, as I told you earlier in the interview, I accidentally found that, you know, that one night by looking at the way my hands were dealt, that I came out with this switch concept. Once I developed switch and the push 22 rule some years later, it just seemed natural to me to focus on blackjack. I've always had a fascination for blackjack. And I would rather have, I'd feel more secure if I had 40 tables out of five games than maybe 200 tables out of one game. I think it sort of lessens the financial worry, if you like.
Mm-hmm. So this free bet blackjack, which you say is coming in a couple months to the Golden Nugget, how does that work?
Well, hopefully I can explain it on the radio because it's quite simple, and I think that is the basis of all good games. But basically, if you imagine you sit down to a blackjack table and you've been dealt, say, a 7 and a 3, and I'm showing a 6 as a dealer, typically, Bob, what would your next move be?
Hey, honey, give me some money. I want a double.
So that's in the regular game. In this game, actually, you don't need to double because the dealer doubles for you. The dealer will actually reach into the tray and get a gold coin that denotes the same stake that you've placed. Let's say it's $25 and place that gold coin next to your wager. If you win your double, you're going to get paid $50, the 2 times $25. If you lose, you only lose $25. And this happens for all hard totals of 9, 10, and 11, and actually any number of cards that make up the 9, 10, 11. Furthermore, the dealer actually offers to split for you as well, apart from face cards. So you get the option, if you've got a pair of sevens, the dealer will offer, say, would you like a free split? So you get the free splits. You get free re-splits. You get free doubles after splits. And you get all that, and in return, I use one of my favorite rules, which is you get a dealer push on 22.
You know, this reminds me when I went to Panama, there would be these pretty girls that would sit at the blackjack tables with just about 2 or 3 betting units, and every time a good doubling or splitting situation came up, they would get this look on their face that suggested, I really want to double or split, but I'm down to so little money, and, you know, you look like a nice guy. Will you make the double or split bet for me? So here it's like playing, and you've got a sugar daddy right next to you who's going to make those doubles and splits for you. At no risk.
I like that. I might use that analogy, Mike. But you're right. Some players, and I've tried to look at the negatives and positives of the game. And one is the player is only getting one bet out there each time. So the casino might say, you know what? We're losing some of the play because the player is only betting once. But my view is, and it does bring up what you say, Mike, if you're down to $25, players don't want to bet more than $5 in case they get a double or a couple of splits and a double and have to put 3 or 4 bets out there. Now, if they want, they can put $20 out there and hope they get a split or a double because the dealer's going to do it for them. So I think it's going to encourage players to maybe have a slightly higher bet ratio to start with.
Well, it's a clever concept. I wish you success with that.
Thank you.
And a good chance the strategy for it will be found on wizardofodds.com.
I'm sure it will find its way there eventually.
Yeah, yes. The odds of that are very good. Speaking of success, Derek Webb is the inventor of three-card poker and did very financially well with that game. And Ernie Moody is the inventor of multiplay video poker, and I hear he made a large fortune on that. So what advice would you give to the many prospective game inventors out there who want to be the next Derek Webb or Ernie Moody?
Yeah, that, I think it's going to be very difficult to find a game now that's going to have the penetration and the number of tables that something like Three Card Poker has, primarily down to the fact there are a lot of new games out there. There are a lot of variations of variations. And really, blackjack and poker games and hold'em poker games have been covered so well. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there is something out there that I'm not aware of, or something that I'm going to create in the future. But, you know, something like 1,500 tables or something of three-card poker, I just can't see that happening with any game in the future.
When you're designing a game, what are the primary features you look for to say, these are the features I want to put in there, free or bonus or something? What do you look for?
First thing I look for is, what do players dislike about blackjack, or what is something that frustrates them in the game of blackjack? So I'll give you an example, Bob.
So put no third base on the machine game. Yeah. So there's nobody can play badly at third base.
Yeah, that's something I can't construct, that one, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's too bad. But that's a winner.
Yeah, some of the rules that, you know, on other games I've got, like power blackjack allows players to split their 15s and 16s, hard 15s and 16s, regardless of what two cards are that make up that total. And again, I just looked at what are the worst two totals in blackjack, and pretty much 16 and 15. Now you can do something about it. The free bet came out as a result of players who will have a split, a re-split, maybe a double, and have five bets out there and lose them all because the dealer flips a 21 over. And that's a very, obviously, frustrating for anyone. So what I look for is, keep it simple. What do the players want? And in return, try and find a rule that players will accept for giving the casino some of the edge back.
All right. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're not just a game inventor, but you're a gambler as well. And when you tell me that back in the day, lots of the UK casinos had the over-under 13 side bet, which is highly countable, and I hear you attack that pretty hard. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I was playing poker and blackjack pretty much as a living. So when the over and under 13 came out, I had a colleague with me who's actually another games inventor, known as Mr. Casino Games on your website, Mike. And we used to travel around the UK, and when the over under 13 came out, it's a very easy bet to beat if you can count. And I actually constructed a count system before it came out from America, just by using the method of elimination, you know, taking a two out and taking a three out and seeing what the effect of removal was. And then we went and played. My partner, you know, Mr. Casino Games, actually made a lot more money than me because he was a lot more aggressive with his betting. But he also ended up getting barred pretty much everywhere as well as a result. But that was a lucrative time for a blackjack player.
Many carnival games have bonus bets and side bets. Your games don't seem to. What's wrong with you?
there's a lot of them out there, Bob. I've got one or two side bets, if you like. And I actually added one to Blackjack Switch, the Super Match. But typically, I'm looking to try and get a complete game in there. If that comes first, if I can think of a side bet that may fit on that game, then I'll slot it on. But my primary view is to come out with the game first. Having said that, there may be one or two side bets coming out in the future, but not yet.
All right. One thing you have in common with my co-host is you are both very strong backgammon players, and I believe you told me that you were ranked 8th in England at one time. So how did you get started in backgammon? How do you build up to be a strong player? And where did you go to find players willing to bet against you?
Okay, so not to upset the eighth place player, I was actually ninth in the British Backgammon Association.
I stand corrected.
Yeah. It wasn't necessarily a UK ranking. It's an organisation for reasonably serious backgammon players that would offer free tournaments. And that gave me the grounding for playing well, knowing how to use the doubling cube. I read 8 books in 2 weeks when I first learned backgammon because I'm the type of person who I don't want to lose. I want to get on top of the game as quickly as I can. And there were cash game availabilities in England at the casinos. It's very legal to play. You can either hire a board, rent a board, or they give you a board for free. And there were quite a lot of players who will play you when you're not known and when you're just learning the game. But as you get stronger, those players sort of drift away a little bit, and then it gets a bit more difficult towards the end. But I played some pretty interesting games with some very colourful characters, and I still enjoy the game today, but I don't play any cash games, or haven't done for a few years.
When I played, I last played 20 years ago. I played primarily at the Cavendish West in Los Angeles. When that, it wasn't a casino, but that when that club went defunct, I stopped playing. But back then, we didn't have any computerized help, so there was no Jellyfish, no Snowy. I'd played 15,000 hours, and I'd read all the top books at that time. But now, with all the computerized programs, players can get much better than I was after 15,000 hours of playing, much quicker.
I think you're absolutely right, Bob, and I think we can draw that same
analogy.
Analogy, thanks, Mike. with Hold'em, of today's game of Hold'em poker, whereas before you used to have to sit down to a live game and you would grind out maybe 30 or 40 hands an hour, now the online players can play sort of 8 tables at once. They can do 1,000 hands an hour and get a lot more experience a lot quicker. And the same applies with the computerized backgammon, where you can actually program it in tutor mode, and it's telling you exactly what your error is, what your percentage error is, whether you should be doubling, whether you should be passing the cube. It's a great help to enhance today's players.
It is. In video poker, it's like if you're not practicing on a computer, you have no idea what a bad player you are.
Yeah.
I suspect that's true in backgammon.
I think you're absolutely right.
One thing when I first got Snowy is I realized I was playing much too passively. Is it was constantly telling me to play more aggressively and to take a chance with just putting a single chip on a point, hoping to capture it on my next turn, doubling if I was just a little bit ahead. Would you agree with that general, advice?
Yeah, I think the computer is very good at spotting any weaknesses you've got in your backgammon. If you're not giving the doubling cube enough, it's going to tell you. And if you're playing moves wrong, it will point it out straight away. I actually had a player who was a pretty good player in the UK, and he was a tough opponent to play. The reason I used to play him was as soon as I got a few points ahead, all his logic would go out the window, and he would pass me the doubling cube after one move. I would purposely play one move borderline wrong or aggressive just so he would pass me the cube. And a computer doesn't do that. A computer doesn't go on tilt. A computer will play the same the whole way through. So you don't get that advantage that you get with some players.
For players who don't play backgammon, ownership of the doubling cube is very advantageous, and learning the doubling cube is probably almost as difficult as learning how to move the checkers. It's good. Did you gamble in Vegas? And if so, what did you play while you were here?
Yeah, typically now I don't try and earn any income from gambling. So if I do gamble, I tend to sit down, if I can, at my own games, just to see how the dealers are dealing them. And for a leisurely game, I might go and sit down at a small Omaha or Hold'em game of poker, and that's pretty much it. I do like video poker as well.
Do you ever get involved with the Omaha tournaments?
Not really, no. Maybe it's something when I'm old and retired, I'm getting that way, or at least feel it, that I might take up when I've stopped inventing.
So what attracts you to Omaha compared to conventional Texas Hold'em?
I just like the extra thought. I've always liked games myself that require additional thinking or additional moves. And with Omaha in England, it wasn't just four cards. You could have five and even six cards. So you start with six cards on a poker game, and you've got a lot of thinking to do. And you might have the best hand on the flop, but you might actually be behind. You might actually be worse off than someone else who's got tremendous draws in a six-card game. So I like that feature.
Some people say that Omaha is a much more mathematical game than Texas Hold'em. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that you've got to balance the what you're holding and what you can finish up holding. So you've got two calculations going on there. You've also got to gauge the opponent and say, is that opponent betting because he's got the straight, or is he betting because he's got a flush draw and maybe a set of middle set or something? And that's quite difficult until you get to know the players and their style of play.
Very good. I want to thank you very much for coming to us. I wish you good luck on the your new game called Free Bet 21.
Free Bet Blackjack.
Free Bet Blackjack, which will be at the Golden Nugget in May, and hopefully casinos everywhere after that.
I mirror that.
So you guys heard it here first.
Yeah, this is it. It's not really being advertised much. Only a few of the casino managers know about it. So this is a bit of a scoop for you. No other radio station knows about Free Bet Blackjack.
Very good.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Mike. Thank
you, Jeff. So, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Well, we learned some good advice about developing blackjack variants. I think giving the player something that normally he's not allowed to do, and of course, you got to take away something, and hopefully the player will at least perceive that he's getting more than he's giving back.
Yeah, one of the things that I really wasn't aware of is that during the shakeout period, sometimes the rules of the games changed. I guess I thought the designer invented all the rules, and then they stayed that way. And according to Jeff, well, sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't, and they just keep tweaking them to try to get the right mix. So it isn't that shocking, but it is a surprise.
That's not a surprise to me, as I've worked for game inventors for 15 years, and I know that when they put their game out in field trial, it's not just that they will change it once at the end of it, but they will call me every single day and say, I got this comment and I got that comment, and it's like they think all day long about how to change the rules, and then they come and bounce all these theories off of me. So they game inventors tend to overthink this, but it is common that after the field trial, the game inventor will reassess the game and think, okay, this rule went over well, this one did not, how can we change it? And we're both familiar with a game called 7-14-21 that was at the Palms, and I thought it was a pretty good game, but the game inventors, when the field trial was over, decided that they thought it could be improved, and I hear it's going to come back with some new rules.
Yes, that's a Leading Edge Design. They are the makers of Multi-Strike, and the owners of it are good friends of both Michael and me. So what's happening at the Wizard website?
I wanted to say one thing. It's May now. That interview with Jeff was recorded a few months ago, and I was in the Golden Nugget, I think, a week ago, and Free Bet Blackjack was not there yet, but I'm going to keep an eye on the place, and we'll let you know when it's out there. Let's see. On the Wizard of Macau, I just added a review of the Grandview Casino, which is one of the places on Taipa, one of the Stanley Ho casinos, kind of one of the smaller ones. And at Wizard of Odds, I've added two classic games that you may have heard of but never seen. One of them is Hazard, which is a old English game from which craps is derived, and the other one is the game of Pharaoh, and this is a game that has a lot of different bets that you may not be aware of. So I did a mathematical analysis of all the Pharaoh bets that I could dig up. So if you have a little interest in gambling history, feel free to check those pages out.
As I recall, Pharaoh is an even money bet.
Yes, it's the base bet is there's 13 of them, one for each rank, and the dealer will after you make your bet, say in a king, the dealer will deal a losing card and a winning card. If the winning card is a king, you'll win even money. If the losing card is a king, you will lose. And if it's anything else, it'll be a push. And if both cards are kings, then you lose half, which is where the house gets its advantage. And it may sound kind of boring, like just a game of luck, but the dealer will go through the whole deck really fast. And, so the speed of the game, as I understand it, was very fast. And this game was in Reno as late as the 1980s. I never saw it. Did you?
No, I didn't. I did not see it, but I have heard it. Wyatt Earp may have known of the game. It was supposed to be a popular game in the Wild West.
Yeah, this was the most popular gambling game in 19th century America. It came to New Orleans at some point and just spread like wildfire up and down the Mississippi River and then all over the place.
I would have thought all the Western shows, if they're gambling, they're playing poker. So I don't know about Faro. Anyway, the South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In May, they're having a Chevy a Day promotion where they're giving away your choice of one of three $25,000 Chevrolets every day. The drawing's at 8:20 every night. You have 24 hours to claim it. Four additional winners will earn $250 in Chevron gas cards each night. If you claim the Chevy within 10 minutes, you get a bonus package worth about $5,000, including taxes, registration, dealer fees, and $2,000 in gas. I've been entering every day for both Shirley and me. I know it's a positive EV. So far, we haven't earned anything yet on it, but I will continue doing it through the end of the month. Double Point Day is next Monday, Memorial Day, midnight to midnight. The Palms Play, Earn, and Win promotion, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for the rest of this month, is about going to the movies. You can earn a popcorn maker, 15-inch TV, movie tickets, DVDs, and the like. You keep the points. For 11 days in a row, through Memorial Day, the Palms is offering a Capture the Alien nightly drawings at 7 p.m. based on your play from 3:46 p.m. the night before. The first drawing was last week, and so every night, the first five winners get $500 and a game piece. The next five winners gets $250 and a game piece. Of the 10 winners, a bonus round will be played, and two of the winners go to the finals on Memorial Day. The 22 winners on Memorial Day will be trying for a $10,500 home entertainment center or $8,400 in cash. The other 21 winners receive a year's worth of weekly movie tickets. For videopoker.com, we earlier mentioned they have the monthly contest featuring Good Times Pay, and that's going to run to the end of the month. For the first 22 days of each month, though, they have a daily contest featuring a different game, and each day has a $50 first prize. These contests are free to enter. On videopoker.com is a site where you can get a good feel for playing a particular game is like. You can do this for free on the website before you go try it in the casino for real money. Next week, our guest will be Frank Neeland. Longtime listeners will remember Frank co-hosted the show with me for 6 months, from February through August last year. We'll be talking about his book, The Secret World of Video Poker Progressive. And Frank has a new radio show nationwide that's going to be starting next Saturday, 2 days after the show next week. So we'll be talking about that as well. Now, Shaq, last week you mentioned an annular eclipse would be visible nearby. Did you, Mrs. Wizard, and your Wizettes go and have a look?
Thanks for asking. Indeed, I went with one of the Wizettes, my 10-year-old son. We went to Utah and watched it from St. George, and we decided to make a whole trip out of it. So we went to Valley of Fire on the way there, and that Sunday we spent the day hiking in Zion, and after that we went to St. George, and we watched it from a park, and I didn't have all the fancy accoutrements that some of the other eclipse buffs have. I just had two pieces of welder's glass, like the kind you put in a welder's mask, and I watched it through that, and at this park it seemed like nobody knew about the eclipse, but I caught the attention of a group of people looking at me and my son looking through this thing, and they got curious. What? Oh, so you must be watching the eclipse, huh? And big crowd gathered around, and we all passed around these glasses, and everyone was had a great time watching it. So had a good time, and but I want to remind you, this is going to be nothing compared to the total eclipse that's going to cut from Oregon to South Carolina in August of 2017. So be sure to mark that on your calendars.
For sure, although my calendar doesn't go that late. It was interesting, like on our the last whatever day Christmas is going to be on this December, New Year's is going to be, you know, 7 days later is going to be on the same day of the week. But in 2017, which is when the eclipse is, Christmas that year and New Year's that year will be on different days. So you may want to think about that one. Several weeks ago, Shaq and I visited the surveillance room at the South Point. Now, we talked about it a little bit, but one interesting point we haven't discussed came when we were closely looking at a random blackjack table from an overhead camera. Now, this player wasn't under any scrutiny at the time. It was just an example so Shaq and I could see what it was like. But the surveillance boss pointed out that one of the players was wearing what looked to be a Movado watch. You know the type. It was solid black circular face with a big white dot instead of a 12. The boss said that many players who wear disguises continue to wear the same watches and rings. He says they keep note of such things on players of interest. So if any of you regularly attempt to change your appearance, keep in mind that your hands are one of the most parts of your body looked at by the cameras. So switching out your rings and or your watches is relatively inexpensive, and not doing so could lead to your discovery. If you aren't going to do this, at a minimum, wear nondescript accessories. Something like a Mickey Mouse watch, for example, would be easily memorable, and you don't want to do that. So do you use disguises when you're playing blackjack, Michael?
I'm afraid not, and I admit I have a pretty horrible act. That's why I usually don't last very long at the tables. But I was impressed that with the cameras, you can zoom in so close. Is you could tell the time on somebody's watch sitting there at the table. And so if you're trying to fly under the radar, I would recommend having several different watches and putting them in some kind of a rotation. And don't get in the habit of wearing the same ring every time either.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Listen, honey, I can't wear my wedding ring anymore. I'm not really doing anything. But Michael said I can't wear the wedding ring anymore.
Well, you know, this is a little off topic.
Oh, okay.
But I've noticed that women treat me nicer when I am wearing a wedding ring.
Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know, because I have not taken this ring off for 15 years. And I'm treated however they treat me, which is well enough. But I guess so you're safe. So tonight, for those of you who aren't watching on TV, because we're not on TV, he's not wearing a ring. So if we go out for a drink afterwards, I expect women to scorn him. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm saying that you will do better with the women because you're wearing the ring.
Oh, well, I might do better than you with or without a ring, or might not. You're considerably younger than me. So anyway, we'll let that one go. So hope you hit lots of royal flushes, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.